welcome everyone to this third and, I promise, final Italian episode of the Caravan Tour of Terror, a show that finds us touring the globe through the medium of horrific, chilling and disturbing entertainment. My name's Donald and I'm the driver on this quest. Joining me at my side as always with a road atlas on his lap and what I'm assuming is a gun in his pocket is my navigator Ali. Say hello, Ali.
Hi, Donald. I've given up on the Italian.
He's sick of it.
The locals do not like it.
Where are we this time? Well, we are at Caravan Park Sexton. Sexton by name, Sexton by nature. No, I don't know what that means. Slap bang in the middle of the imposing Dolomites. Look at them, they're very impressive. We're here because we're just about to leave Italy, but before we do, we've learnt about a local cemetery with a returner problem and a brooding gothic caretaker. Ali, tell us about today's film, Cemetery Man, or De la Morte de la More.
Well, I've been spending the entire time. So
give it a bit of energy.
No, that's the... You need to let me get the...
Oh, no.
I'm still in the bit. You're the one that messed this up. Yeah, no, you're the one that messed this up.
I'm keeping this in. So don't say you've messed it up because it's staying. You just sound so beaten down.
I am beaten down. I've spent the entire journey up carving crosses into bullets to make them dum-dums.
You officially hate Italy is what you're saying.
Well, whoa, I am not going to say such things on this podcast.
That's not the official podcast view, that's just your view.
No, whoa! No.
Could you please give everyone your personal email address rather than the podcast, caravantourofterror@gmail.com. Right, Ali, buck up, get through it, proceed.
So, Cemetery Man is a wild ride that involves Rupert Everett.
Done.
Yeah. No, Rupert Everett is a caretaker for a graveyard in a small Italian town filled with British people. It's weird.
Italian names.
with Italian names. His name is Francesco Della Morte.
Yeah. And his best English friend is called Franco. Yep.
Yeah. The only person that doesn't, I suppose, is Nagy a name?
Nagy. I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
Give it to something that's a name. But yeah, he takes care of this graveyard. And the graveyard has a problem, which seems known by the mayor and, let's say, the police chief, that the dead come back to life roughly 7 days after they die. Roughly. It's not, it's roughly. It seems to get quicker as the movie goes on.
The logic of this film, yeah, there's not very much of it.
First things first, Rupert Everett is so jacked, and they want you to know that right off the bat.
He's either topless or he's wearing flowing white shirts, wet hair. He's very gothic, very 90s. Dish.
It's very 90s in that his suit doesn't fit him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hanging off his frame.
It really is. But he takes care of this problem as the dead come back as returners. And to say there's a plot in this movie would really, really be a lie. And I wouldn't want to do that because this movie is literally just his kind of descent into madness because he hates his job and he hates his life. It's a very nihilistic movie. But it's also a comedy, so...
It's also a comedy. It's not a gut buster.
But it is so over the top.
Yeah.
Broody, like...
It takes place... It's not realistic. It takes place in some other weird reality. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like... I think people call it hyper-real. Like, it's not... The logic of the real world doesn't really apply to this film in a lot of ways, obviously. But also how people react to him and stuff and what happens with the plot, it's all very strange.
Yeah. And there is bits I will talk about, like, and that progresses as the movie goes on, that kind of dissociation from everything and everyone around.
Pre-spoilers. It's a love story, basically, isn't it? I mean, pre-spoilers, I'm sure we could talk about he's killing these returners, but I'm going to call them zombies and returners interchangeably. He's got Nagi, his friend.
His disgusting, disgusting, also, like, almost mute.
He says one word a lot of the time, yeah.
Yeah, he communicates in grunts and single words and gutterances. Yeah.
He's a simple man, and unfortunately the butt of a lot of jokes, which is a bit annoying that two out of the three movies we've watched in Italy have had that happening. Oh, dear.
No, but anyway. it's really the disgustingness of it. Like, they often cut to him when he's, like, drooling or shoveling face, like, all over his face.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah. Yeah, at one point he meets the mayor's daughter, who is a child, falls in love with her. I mean,
she's between 14 and 16.
He's like early middle-aged, bald, fat man. Yeah, and he's so in love with her that he vomits all over her.
The one thing I did look up over this movie...
Was his age?
Was the age of Rupert Everett and the actor that played Nagi. Rupert Everett was like... 26 or something like that.
His cheeks could cut glass.
Nagi is 28.
Wow. He wears it not well.
Yeah, but there's two years difference between them.
Oh my god.
He meets the mayor's daughter, this like teen
there's two
girl,
there's two love stories going on and there's two
he,
love, yes
and he first he stares at her drooling again, and then just vomits on her.
It's horrible.
I mean, someone goes, do you want to ride on a motorbike? And she goes,
spoilers. Yeah, so she has a lovely motorbike ride.
But it's just in the sense that it's just the fact that right after she gets vomited on, she literally goes, oh, okay, let's go.
Yeah, it was this,
I would
with
be
this
like,
guy,
I
yeah.
need to go home now. I would probably vomit. I would probably just vomit there and then.
So not only does Nagi have that moment where he instantly falls in love with a girl he's just seen for the first time, but that also happens to Francesco when he sees the much younger partner of a recently deceased guy, at his funeral, and basically decides he's going to
Donald. Yes? I think you mean the recently widowed of a fuck machine. And they make that so clear.
Yeah, it's...
That he fucked so good.
I lied earlier. I did get a laugh because they, like, have a snog or something right on the grave, or, like, they're getting a bit hot and heavy right next to the grave, and there's a picture of the guy on the gravestone, and it turns from him looking blankly ahead to him, like, looking at them, like, what? that made me chuckle. Yeah. That made me chuckle. Right, that's as far as I'm going pre-spoilers, I think. Not that it matters, particularly.
I don't know, so right, this is, like, he clearly has this, I'm speaking out the window of the caravan at this point. He clearly has an idea of what constitutes spoilers and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Apart from, like, two or three bits in this movie, I have no idea, because it doesn't have a plot.
Yeah, I know. I know. I chose an arbitrary point in my mind, basically.
Great.
Well, yeah. So, you know, people that might care about that thing, that kind of stuff, will have to skip ahead. Do we think you should bother? No, because this movie's nonsense, but, you know, just in case they do. Yeah. So, also, when they are snogging, you get those little blue spirits that are clearly just like flames or something. Little blue flames hovering around them. And they are...
What? The ping pong balls on fire.
On wires.
On clearly visible
clear wires. It's awful. I think that the advent of DVD quality really did this movie dirty because they're so obvious. It's crazy. Then we find out that Rupert's impotent, which I thought was a weird joke, but actually is one of the main driving forces of theme of this film.
So,
and it comes back so much.
But yeah, I took that as people believe he's impotent. Because
At the start.
Right at the start, right? Because yeah. It's right after he clearly fucks a woman.
Well, he does that more than once. But, yeah.
Yeah, no, but right at the... we're talking about this moment, like...
Yeah.
Right, I was like, aw, Rupert, sorry, bud. Because, like,
you see,
they
you
have
see
a full launch.
Which I thought was... There's a sex scene. So...
You're like, go back!
Freeze frame. Him and the girl, who is unnamed, so... Oh, that gets even more complicated later. Have a sex scene, and... You don't see a lot, but yeah, you see his little... Yeah. His little willy. His little non-functional willy, according to the...
So, no, but I took that as, like... So yeah, first of all, like, he goes down of her, like, on her... On the like, most goes down on her without showing things you can.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, he fucks her.
Yeah.
So he's not impotent. People just think he's impotent. Possibly because he's the graveyard keeper.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
Engineer. People keep calling him an engineer.
Yeah, I don't really understand what that's about either. She dies.
Right, hold on.
What? Why? Hold on. We're pro spoilers. We're trying to get
through. How does she die?
How does she die?
Yeah, exactly. Because this is very important.
Oh my god, I can't remember. How does she die?
So... while they're fucking on the gravestone, her husband comes back as a returner.
Of course. Yes.
And she's like, "No, chill, bud."
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
And then he bites her on the arm.
Yep.
He shoots her husband as he shoots
Francesco. Francesco, I mean. De La Morte shoots a lot of zombies and other people in the head.
Casually.
So, yeah. Instant, like, he could be quite far away. Bang, one shot dead. So, yes, he does his business.
Yeah.
So then she's in the crypt, lying out, like, under a veil.
Yeah.
And there's a fly that flies on her. And that's on a wire as well.
There is. But before he takes her down... he takes it inside and he calls the doctor.
Yeah.
And the doctor's, because I was thinking, I was like, love, seriously. Like, you were bitten on the arm, and also this kind of, like, they needed to do this because otherwise this sets the thing, like, this is what is your rules for zombies?
Yes.
She's been bitten. It's 1994. People know what zombies are at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So he takes it in, and the doctor's like, "She died of fear. That bite's nasty, but all right." Like, so she dies of fear, and he takes her down, and then she's all. And he gets. By the way, every like 4.5 goddamn minutes in this movie, Rupert Everett either out loud or. Through voiceover, just monologues.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like...
Yeah.
There's clearly a lot of... like, inspiration of... those kind of old gothic horror movies.
Yeah.
But, like, and playing that for comedy, as well as that kind of Edgar Allan Poe overwrought... and through the first what I thought was half and turned out to be 30 minutes into the film but for the first like 45 minutes to an hour, like, I could see what it was going for. I just didn't like the jokes aren't good.
Hey, whoa, whoa, don't slip into review time here.
I'm allowed to say, I'm talking about the movie, like, because it tries to hit this kind of tone of, you know, we're talking about him falling in love and her dying, and none of this is at all serious when it's happening. Like, shooting through the head, like, and throughout all of it, Francesco takes this just really passive attitude, except when she dies, and then it's just like, except when he first meets her and then has to, then when she dies, because when he first meets her, he's like, I've never loved before. And it's ridiculous. Like, it is full on just like lays eyes on her and is besotted.
Yeah.
And then, you know, everything else, it's like, we're all just in the moments between living and death, and
that's not bad.
We're all just returners in the end.
Oh dear.
And then when she dies, he's, you know, it is the most tragic thing. And he has literally known her to like a weekend. I'll call it a long weekend. He's known her. He meets her, bumbles it, meets her, does better, meets her, fucks her, dies.
Very rude.
Who hurt him?
They made sweet love.
Oh, sorry. I'm earning my explicit tag. So yeah, it takes this really, really, like, I don't know, like, Zucker-esque airplane.
Oh yeah,
like that. Yeah. It's that kind of like real, like, wink and nod to the camera at times.
Yeah, but not that jokey.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, exactly. Yeah. Just that kind of, like, you know, it's not like an inflatable Undertaker pops out. But yeah, that kind of tone at certain points of, like, nothing serious, and it's like that kind of world, like you were saying, of that, like, you wouldn't believe these people existed in a real world, except for the sweet little old lady who is so, so concerned about what her grave is going to be like.
So let's go back to the mayor's daughter jumping on that motorbike. The whole gang of them.
Oh, you mean Love Story number two?
Runs slap bang into a bus, so she gets her head. I mean,
this is a turning point in the movie, I felt.
I think the turning point's a slightly different point, but we will discuss that.
I'm meaning personally.
Oh, right, okay.
For me, this is where the movie actually became, like, way more entertaining.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Like, literally with the crushing of the head. It's really
so
bad.
Head gets like completely smooshed to smithereens, but then they manage to stitch her back together and bury her in a glass coffin somehow. So that Nagi can, so that Nagi can still pine for her. And then obviously he digs her up, pulls her head off.
The digging, yeah.
And then she's talking because she's a returner, so that she has complete conversations with him because the logic of this film is basically meaningless. And they fall in love again, sort of, for the first time. I'm sure she says, "Oh, I don't have any choice in the matter, but it's okay. I'm okay with this anyway."
Yeah, I noticed that line too.
Yeah. Well, there's a worse one that comes up a bit later.
No, that's just an entire story
that's
in
awful.
This movie.
God. Del Morte has to... Del Morte, it's hard because she's not named, I don't think. So Del Morte's love interest comes back. Yeah, the woman comes back in the crypt. He glancingly shoots her in the head for the one time he basically misses.
That's what I was saying. I was like that would hurt, but that wouldn't even kill me.
Then later on she comes back as a returner and he shoots her properly, and then he realizes that the last time he shot her she wasn't actually dead, she was just waking up, which is
so
odd.
She did not die of fear, and that's doctor.
The worst doctor. But he blames himself, yeah, as if it's anything to do with him. It's obviously not.
Yeah, it's literally his job. It's literally his job to shoot things that come back to life. He got the medical doctor to do the medical doctor bit.
Then they're burning all this stuff. They have a bonfire of all mementos and things, and they burn. Yeah, so he's got a habit where he reads phone books, and then
It starts as a joke.
It's still a joke. It's just a weird joke.
It's
to
a
me.
Bad running. Yeah, it's yeah. a bad running joke. But yeah, he that weirdly ties into the plot in some ways. So yeah, at the start of the movie, he's like, "I've only ever read two books in my life." And one of them was the phone book. And I was like, dude, you've read the phone book? Like, that's impressive in the same way that, like, you know, I built enough origami cranes as high as Everest. Yes. Like, okay, like, no one should ever do that, but yeah, okay. Yeah. go you. But it turns out he actually did read the phone book.
Yeah, probably, yeah. He gets bitten. Which is my turning point for the film's narrative. She bites him, right? On the shoulder. So that happens, but he seems fine. He doesn't... He just carries on with everything. They're burning all the mementos. Nagi puts a phone book on the fire. He's like, oh, that's a classic! But yeah. Then the ashes
it's the
turn into
material we've got.
The ashes turn into a pretty good model of a skeletal Grim Reaper who tells him that he should actually go and kill the living rather than the dead. And after that, it's all weird.
I'm not gonna lie. When that Grim Reaper showed up, I was like, didn't know this was a Discworld movie.
Yeah, well, it really does sound the same as
But also looks like it's a.
He's got wings, weirdly. But it looks cool.
Oh, sorry, Donald. What does the Grim Reaper look like?
Well, I never thought he had wings.
Really? I've seen a few winged Grim Reapers. I definitely do mean that as a compliment. Like that model, actually, like I really liked that model. And so yeah.
And then shit just gets weirder. I'd say.
So are you saying we turn into spoilers now? Is this where this goes?
Spoilers was ages ago. I think spoilers is when she dies. I think I'm arbitrarily selecting that as the point where spoilers happen. It's totally arbitrary. I know it is, but it's... Oh, God. Then basically the film becomes... He meets her two more times. It's really weird.
Right, yeah.
It's the same actress playing different girls. And he falls in love with each of them, basically, as soon as
he
sees them.
Instantly.
Yeah. The second one's the most... No, it's not. The last two are both... The second one's the most problematic, but no, it's not, because I just remember what happened to the third one. They're both really problematic. The second one's really problematic because he meets a girl who says she's phobic of erect penises. Mm-hmm. So he's like, okay, this is the best scene of the film for me. He goes to the doctor, he says, cut it off. And then the doctor gets sheep shears. It's an awesome scene, but then decides he's going to inject him with a chemical castration thing, and then obviously he needs to go straight in dick. Not that you see that, but Rupert Everett's screaming, and I'm like, you want them to cut it off? Like, why are you?
Yeah, without anaesthetic.
Why are you being such a fucking idiot about a needle going to it?
Apparently, stops him having an erection for a month.
Yeah. Because the girl's afraid of erections. But he's already impotent. I don't... Anyway.
He's not. Like, this is what I'm saying. Is, like, it's just a weird thing about what the townspeople think of the grave digger.
Maybe, yeah. At one point, they say he's not a suspect in a crime because they know he can't get up and stuff. It's weird. They all know.
So, the first... We'll get into that because I've got a decent through line of the murder story. There's about eight, like this is what I'm saying, there's no plot to this movie. There's just about eight little plots going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So the penisphobic woman, love number two for Francesco, comes to him right after this, wonderful doctor scene and is like, something wonderful has happened, darling.
Oh,
and
no.
We get to the most, I'm definitely seeing the most problematic scene in the movie.
Yeah, it is.
And he's so he's obviously, first of all, he kisses her for way too long. And then she's like, so I had a meeting with the mayor and he raped me. And he is horrified. Right, first of all, he's horrified in a way that I was like, are you horrified at him or her?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
He definitely recoils in a way that's like, ooh.
Yeah.
And I was already a bit like...
on guard.
No, Donald, I was more than on guard at this point. And then she goes, no. It's okay. I liked it. And it's caused my phobia of penis.
Yeah, then they did it again. She's fallen in love with him.
Yeah.
And now they're going to be together forever.
But she still loves him.
She still loves him.
It doesn't matter.
Bye.
It doesn't matter. He's impotent anyway. So you're never going to. She's just never going
to again. Yep. And then third love story. He's in the cafe.
So
wallowing. Oh, okay, yeah.
Between these is where the movie really descends. And this is where the murders kind of come into play, because when his first love dies, the police detective is he questions Francesco and he's like, "Oh, how did this happen?" And he's like, and he's going, "Oh, well, doesn't matter. You couldn't have done it because you can't get it up." And it's, you know, it's that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a real thing of, like, everything in this town has to be pristine and wonderful because the mayor has, he's 15 times re-elected. And the thing is, it doesn't seem like that nice a place. Francesco often goes out and he gets yelled at, and there's people sitting about, like, you're loitering and angry and scary ways. You know, it's not like the Detroit, Italy of what we saw before, but it's definitely a kind of like. It's not things aren't the paradise that the mayor and the police chief want things to be.
Yeah.
And Francesco plays a huge part in that with his returner business.
Mm.
They are both aware of it, never mention it ever. So when Francesco, between love number two and love number three, starts just descending into madness because he's been bitten, she's left him. He just takes his gun out and just starts blasting people.
Yep.
Starts blasting the youths that yelled at him and then drives home. And then
the Grim Reaper told him to do it.
Yeah, the Grim Reaper told him to do it. What would you do, Donald, if the Grim Reaper was like, "Yo, dude, go kill people"? Terry Pratchett told me to tell you. And he wakes up to the police chief, and the police chief's like, "Ah, where were you between these hours and these hours? It was just because your car was, you know, down there." And he even says, you know, "Ah, maybe your assistant." He's like, "Oh, he can't drive." Like, he refuses to even contemplate the idea that Francesco might have done this.
Mm.
And this becomes, like, more and more severe.
Yeah.
He goes out and commits more murders, and he's
it gets crazy.
Blank refuses. And it all starts culminating with love number three, which he just randomly meets in a bar.
Yes.
He is sitting, feeling forlorn. Mm-hmm. Love number two has left him, and he just sits there being miserable. On his way there, he drives past some prostitutes, but drives away from them to go to the bar. Mm. And this girl sits down, and she's like, "Hey, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah." You know, like, And he is just like super stone faced. It plays better in a graveyard, Rupert. Seriously, like you just come across as an asshole in a bar when you be the broody undertaker. Yeah. And she says, I've got a friend. And her friend
is... Lo and behold.
The woman.
Again.
So he goes... Yeah, again. So he gives them a lift home.
Yep.
And he... She... Yeah. And the woman makes him come inside by saying, you know, I make wishes come true. And he says, fall in love with me.
Yeah.
And she says, I already have.
Yeah.
And then they make...
Sweet whoopee.
Sweet whoopee over and over again.
He doesn't think it'll work, but then...
Yeah, because he's had his month-long penis injection.
But then they just do it a few times.
Donald. I mean... If I was being crass, you're not giving the man enough credit. They're like animals.
Oh, dear. Then he goes to get some wine and twist.
And twist. The friend says, hey, you can just pay me if you want.
Yep.
And he is disgusted.
So how does he deal with this in a sensible, mature way?
He puts a two-bar heater in her bed, covers it with a blanket so it catches fire, and then walks out.
Yep. Just murder.
Like, I was like, double murder. Triple murder. There was a third one in there. They had a third roommate. And I was like, I mean, she's definitely not cool there, because at no point does she make it clear that she is a prostitute and he's paying for this.
Also, she deserved it.
No, this is what I'm saying, but that is quite
overreaction. Oh dear.
So he goes back to
he just fucks
off back to the cemetery as he always does, and again, he gets questioned by the police chief.
He says specific to the police chief, oh, I bet you want to know where I was between 1 and 3 last night.
Yeah. That's how I start every conversation with everyone, actually.
Oh, dear. But lo and behold, the inspector's like, oh, no, it's fine. We found this check with your name on it, but it doesn't matter. This is... we've got the actual killer. It's your best friend Franco, who also killed his wife and child, tried to kill himself. He's responsible for all these murders and he's in hospital.
Yep.
So
and it's just and Francesco gets furious at the fact that it's just, even though it's blatantly him, even though he's like that they are not even willing to look at him for it.
It's like his insecurities about other men are factoring into murders as well. It's because all the other men that seem to be in this film that are mentioned as fuckers do so incredibly well, whereas he's supposed to be impotent, and then he keeps going around killing people, and these other men seem to be getting, or like he's just all ignored completely. Yeah, he's completely ignored. So he goes to visit Franco in hospital.
This is the climax of the movie. This is the, like,
this
goes
bizarre.
Off the rails from here.
I'd argue it was off the rails already, but fair enough. He visits his friend on this nice set. It's like a circular... It's weird. There's like screens around the beds and it's like an isolation. It looks kind of cool.
Yeah. It's kind of that, like, if you imagine, basically an operating theater,
but without
any of the walls. It's just darkness where walls should be.
And he's obviously pissed off at Franco for all this. Then a nun comes in, just And he just shoots her in the head. Yeah. She falls over. Then a doctor comes in and asks, oh, sister, what are you doing on the floor? Anyway, blah, blah. And the doctor's a piece of shit because he's like, oh, I could, turn off his life support for you if you wanted. This guy, means nothing. So he shoots the doctor in the head. Then a nurse comes in and he shoots the nurse in the head. And it just reminded me... I didn't even notice that. But it just reminded me of when you play Hitman and someone discovers you. Then the next person discovers you and you just end up with a pile of bodies. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, so the big difference between the doctor and the second nurse is that the second nurse is actually scared. The doctor comes in is completely, as you said, like she's sleeping and he's like, oh, weird.
But that's true. The nurse is she's scared in his presence. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And he demands Franco tell him why he's taking credit for all of this.
Mm.
And Franco doesn't know who he is. Mm. He just looks at him with fear.
Mm.
So Francesco runs out and things
he runs into the inspector who's like, there's a murder on the loose. You've got a gun, good. You can defend yourself.
It's really great. It is the absolute peak of his madness because he does say, there's a madman on the fourth floor shooting people. And as he's walking out, you've got a gun, good, defend yourself. And he screams at them, why won't you notice? Why?
No one notices. Everyone filters away.
It's a big
Rupert Everett scream. And everyone filters away.
Do you want to talk about the climax?
Della Morte and Nagi, he decides it's best if he just gets the fuck out of here because it's driving him insane. So they drive away from town. There's a monologue going on. He's talking about what they're doing. They drive through a tunnel, and then when they get out of the tunnel, the highway that they were driving on just becomes, it's just broken, and there's just like...
Silent Hill. It's like Silent
Hill. There's nothing in front of them. The road leads to nowhere. I actually thought it was going to do the thing where he drives through and they end up back in the village.
I also thought he was going to do the thing where he drives through and he's back in. Because he leaves the town and within moments he's in the tunnel and it's that kind of like he has got out of the town.
Yeah. The tunnel's really unnaturally, not unnaturally, but it seems very long and in darkness for a long time, so it's clear something's going to happen. But then the road's just ended, it's crumbled, there's nothing in front of them. So obviously he freaks out a little bit at this.
And slams on the brakes because he had to stop the car. Nagi smashes his face off the dashboard.
I wasn't even going to bother talking about that.
Fair enough.
But yeah, so Nagi's got this head wound. You can talk about it if you want. Go ahead. I was just gonna cut to the actual meat of the ending. What is that soap? Was it General Hospital where in the finale it turns out that it was all in the mind of a child, and because it zooms out of the hospital and the hospital's in a snow globe? And that, I think it's General Hospital, one of these trashy shows. But the problem with that is that this was in the 90s when TV shows liked to do crossovers. So there was a guy who played a detective in loads of TV shows, and he'd been in General Hospital. He'd also been in X-Files, and he'd also been in other shows, which meant that you can Google it. There's an entire universe, canonical universe of TV shows that all take place in the mind of this one autistic child because of all the crossovers they did. And that's what this film does. It starts snowing, it zooms out, and the two of them are little figures in a snow globe as credits roll.
There's another one like that, but it's not coming to mind yet. So, but yeah, it is. It's and I feel the moments between the breaks and the snow globe are quite important.
Mm-hmm.
You know that essentially Nagi dies from his head wound, and Rupert Everett knows he has to shoot him in the head, returner style.
Yeah.
So he prepares two bullets, ostensibly for him and Nagi.
Mm-hmm.
And can't bring himself to shoot Nagi in the head. And that was actually a moment I liked, because earlier in the movie he says, he talks about if he became a returner,
mm-hmm.
and he says, Nagi wouldn't be able to put me down, you know, he couldn't harm a breath on me. And he comes out to Nagi about to attack him because he's mm-hmm. been bitten. And that kind of flip there, where he can't bring himself to actually shoot Nagi. Nagi then wakes up
mm-hmm.
and speaks for the yes, first time.
That's true, yeah.
And Rupert, and he says, man, this is awful. Can you take me back? And he turns to Rupert Everett, and Rupert Everett goes, Nag. Like the same way Nagi had done the entire movie. Then you get the pan out to the snow globe.
Yes.
And fuck me.
Right, I've Googled it while you were explaining all that. It was set elsewhere. The character was Tommy Westfall. And because there was Detective Munch that appeared in Law and Order and the X-Files, there's the Tommy Westfall universe in which all these all these shows are creations of this one character. And it's also been called one of the worst finales of all time in TV history. Nice. Because it completely reduced a multiple-year TV show as completely redundant. This movie, not the same situation in terms of the effect of the ending. It's just funny that they did the snow globe ending.
I found my Thomas. So Thomas Lennon, who's an actor, mostly appears in, he's that kind of guy in sitcoms where you'll see him in every sitcom at least once,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. He is in Memento
mm-hmm.
As a doctor, and he is The Dark Knight Rises as a doctor,
yeah.
And he believes that they are in the same universe.
I quite like
that. Yeah. I mean,
that's cool.
Definitely make that into Batman villain. And that's what this movie's about.
So that's the movie. Do you like it?
No.
Nah. So
I enjoyed the second half a lot more than the first half for a lot of reasons. Even the humor, I felt was landing.
It's admirably batshit. You have to give it
that. Oh, yeah. It's so, no, but crazy. That's, the end has real, flares of Brazil. Terry Gilliam style, full on, the world is falling apart in a way that is theatrical to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Just becoming a weird stage play.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I think a lot of it is.
It's unfortunately it's not the movie I wanted it to be, because I wanted it to be a bit more fun and a bit less.
Yeah.
I said specifically it was going to be a palate cleanser after the other two movies that we've done here, which were both filled to the brim of significance and imagery. And unfortunately, this movie is too. I just don't care enough to look it up, to not look up, but kind of think about it too much. I wanted fun. And not quite literal.
You got a movie. You got a movie full of metaphors for fascism and straight up nihilism.
Yeah. So great. I could see why people would really. This will be some people's fucking favorite movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could see why they might like it, but it didn't mean. Particularly do anything for me.
I think one of the things that actually pulls it down, and if it wasn't made in the 90s, and I feel like at certain points it has a very 90s comedy attempt in it. And if it just tried to make its own weird comedy, yeah, it might not have been... I don't know how successful it was, but it might not have been as liked, but I think it would have flowed better as a movie. Like, those early jokes are really, like... They just fall very flat, and I think that is a product of its...
I don't think it's trying to make you laugh out loud, and if it is, it doesn't succeed, but it's more like wry... Dark.
But there are moments where I'm like, nah, they're definitely wanting a chuckle out of you here.
Do you think?
There.
I don't know. But that might just be because it didn't do it for me.
Yeah, no, but that's...
might just be generosity on my part.
Yeah, I definitely... Like, I think Rupert Everett does a great job in this. A lot, like, his physical acting is very good.
Yeah.
Especially, there's a scene where he's driving into the... graveyard, and the old woman who's constantly obsessed with her grave is coming out, and she starts talking to him, and he puts on a face, like, you talk about faces that can't be bothered. This was an entire body that couldn't be bothered, including the car, and he works it so well. I remember the moment. It's a great, great physical piece of comedy, and that made me chuckle. Like, that was a great moment of, like, no, that was funny. The other moments, I feel, didn't really hit that. I feel, you know, if this movie was maybe made a wee bit late, then again, if it was a 2000s comedy, it might have been even worse. Let's move it back to the 80s.
The boner jokes would have been much more egregious. God.
Yeah. He would have been a skateboarding Undertaker.
I agree that he was really good. And I could appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like you, I was a bit like, it's not 100% holding my attention, which is weird because it's so crazy. Like, so much weird stuff happens.
That's why I like the second half way better.
Yeah, because it just gets you, dials it up even more.
Fucking goes for it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm genuinely tempted because I know how bad I will probably be at this, but I'm honestly tempted to call this next segment Ali Gets Themes Wrong. but just in terms of what I thought was kind of coming across, coming out of, you know, Italy's always had a huge fascination with fascism, both in terms of their own past and the concept as a whole. It kind of lingers around a lot of their, like, art.
Yeah.
And I think it was, what I felt was happening was, it was essentially Francesco's slow descent into the realization that if you are useful to a certain higher body, there's no end to what you can do. And, you know, you've seen plenty of crooked cops and crooked mayors. Like, the mayor is a, like, sleazy scumbag in the sense that he always wanted to get a good photo. Like, there's a great moment where he's he asks to get because there's this rumor going on about the graveyard, he asks to get his daughter unearthed and
exhumed.
To have a photo photo taken with her, and he's literally
for election material.
Yeah, and he's literally like Rupert is digging her up, and he's like, so, you know, we've got the light here, and oh, this is going to be a great, like, callous as shit.
Yeah,
but never at one point is it like wink and a nod, like, we know what you're doing, and we will help you, and we will. It is none of that. It is just a facade of no, this is our Undertaker. He does amazing work at the, like, it's that kind of how it's without question that this man is of moral standard because he is one of the people that is useful and in this circle and in this bubble, and to the point where he will shoot 4 people in a hospital. And the police chief will be so like, great, you've got a gun to defend yourself. Like, and that's, I really enjoyed that laugh because it was such a like hammer in that home
kind of
moment.
Yeah.
And if the police chief does have that kind of, like, you know, long trench coat appears out of everywhere, doesn't have too much concern about He is there to do his job. He is not there to help the people.
Yeah.
He is a police chief in title.
Yeah.
And you know that the so one thing is the bus that ran over the mayor's daughter is filled with kids and goes off a cliff. so like literally the next day the police chief like got another load for you, and they're literally like carting in like, you know, this trail of bodies, and like he's that kind of like, that is what the police are there to do.
Yep.
Mayors are there to win elections and police are there to solve murders.
Mm.
Do you have a murderer? Yes. Do you have a, like,
yeah,
do you have the murderer? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I feel that a lot of that gets played out, and I feel that that would have been a better movie had it not been for the kind of jokes that it did try and land a lot of the time. Again, the dark humor worked really well. Like, that kind of you know, callousness from these ridiculous figures worked better as humor than Nagi scarfing down more spaghetti and spying on people when they're fucking. Like, that's not it's not good humor.
Not the first time we've had it either in Italy.
Yeah, not the first time we've had it in Italy.
Oh dear.
So that's kind of what I got from it.
That was Ali's theme corner.
Ali's theme corner.
We'd need to find a better title for that.
Yeah.
Go on. Do. Quick.
No,
quick.
No, I'm not
quick. Quick. Ali's theme. We need to name it so that you feel obliged to thematically dissect even the most awful of films I might subject you to.
This is what my thought was.
Other films you'd be to
like,
watch.
This is a horror movie from the United States called Frederick Got Fingered, I believe. Ali, could you break down the themes of it for me?
Got... So, I looked up some trivia for this film, and this is gonna... Just bear with me, okay? So, the worst piece of trivia I've had to read out so far. In 2009, the horror website A Shot in the Head chose Anna Falchi's boobs from her nude scenes in this film as number one on their list of top 10 boobs in horror movies. Would you agree? He's ignoring that. He's not going for it, right? The ossuary that we used in the film was quite real. This is on IMDb. Supposedly, one of the crew members removed some of the bones from the ossuary during filming, but quickly replaced them the next day, claiming to have encountered an angry ghost following the removal of the bones. Right.
I mean,
that piece of trivia, right?
Like, right, I'm just...
Yeah, give me your opinions.
Yeah,
the first one, distasteful. 2009, that's maybe a bit late to be doing those kind of things, guys. I'm just saying.
The second one was an interesting fact until it got absolutely bullshit.
Which makes me think that it's all bullshit.
Oh, no, but that's why I hate it so much.
No.
I was like, that's a really interesting... Oh, no.
Now, let's take the theme of, is this bullshit or not? I've had to read bits of trivia out in this before, and I've always been like, is this real? It's hard to tell, right? So there's trivia on
I've seen a ghost, I've been in an ossuary.
There's trivia on the Wikipedia page. And I've seen this repeated everywhere, right? Director Martin Scorsese called Della Morte, Della More one of the best Italian films of the 90s. I've seen that repeatedly mentioned, right? So I was like, where is this? Okay.
Where is this quote? Yeah.
So the wiki links to the New York Times, where all it says is that he said this. It has no source, right? So then I Googled it, and I found... Okay, just bear with me. I found a paper by Douglas Kesey where he talks about the intertwinings of death and desire and Michele Soavi's Della Morte, Della More. It's about 20 pages long, right? Went to the bibliography. The bibliography says that, attributes the quote to Tim Lucas and Andy Black, right? Andy Black said, apparently Andy Black's source was 1998, so he can't be the original source. Tim Black was 1997. Tim Lucas, sorry, was 1997. Tim Lucas published a magazine called Video Watchdog, okay? I went on to Video Watchdog, and they sell PDFs, back issues of the magazines, right? So I think it was issue 38. So I bought issue 38. It cost me about £3. Obviously, I read it, and obviously, it has no direct quote in it, okay? So I was like, great, dead end, that didn't work. Then I started Googling more. I found a website called pissedoffgeek.com. Apparently, an article in 2011 linked that quote to British critic Alan Jones, right? That website is dead, right? Alan Jones wrote a piece about Cemetery Man for the magazine Cine Fantastique, right? So I got issue that is linked in the academic paper as well. So I was like, right, okay, I'll find that. So I got volume 25, issue number 5 of Cine Fantastique, find it. And unfortunately, I read the whole thing. I read the article, and it's written before the release of the film. So that's not attributable either. Now, weirdly,
how far?
In terms of what? Oh, before the release?
Like, if it was 3 months, he could have seen, like, it's... Maybe. No, I don't know if you know, Martin Scorsese doesn't have to wait for release dates.
Yeah, so it's not mentioned. So Martin Scorsese is not mentioned. And it's talking about the film and when it's going to come out eventually. Okay. Right? And weirdly, so Alan Jones is one of the organisers of Fright Fest. We've both been in the same room as Alan Jones over a period. So Alan Jones, there's photos on Twitter of Alan Jones. He's put up a photo on Twitter. He's also, there's a booklet Alan Jones has kept, a personal on-set memoir about this film. So he was obviously, he was involved in some kind of stage in the production, not in terms of the film, but he's obviously got a relationship with the film. But I still can't find him ever actually, there's no record of any interview.
I really want to find a Q&A with Martin Scorsese. Every Q&A until I get the opportunity,
right,
to this just
this is
say,
a call. Martin, contact us now and say whether you said this. I will also say that the quote morphed from being the best, one of the best films in the 90s, or to being the best film of the year. So the more I followed it, it kind of changed a little bit, but I cannot ever find, like, I'm not saying that Alan Jones has made this up, for the record, because I'm sure he's you know, he organized Fright Fest, seems like a great guy. I just want to find the article that must have been published somewhere that this happened. So huge tangent, can't back up that piece of trivia, and I'm fucking sick of it. Actually, this piece of trivia is not on IMDb, which is interesting, so I wonder if that was removed because of lack of evidence, but it's still on the Wikipedia page. But all it links to is another website that provides no source for it. So £3 down. Luckily, I didn't pay for Cinefastique. The internet's amazing. You could read all the back issues of Cinefastique. I'm probably one of the few people that's been on volume 25, issue 5 for the last wee while. But, you know, I might look
some
up more of them in the future.
Some man in a room just woke up. £3? Red lights flashing for no reason. He's worked there 15 years, Donald, and that still wouldn't cover the time back to then.
Yes. I cannot find Alan Jones saying this. I know he was on set. I don't know if people have attributed this to him, for lack of a better option. Can't find any source for that. And I have tried. Okay? So, and the thing that annoys me about it is, whenever you read opinion pieces about this film, they always fucking mention it. As if it's kind of like, well, look, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
This is like, you know,
but look, Martin Scorsese says this is one of the best films of the 90s. So you have to take my positive opinions about this film with a bit more, you know, listen to them a bit more than you would normally. They all mention it. It's ridiculous.
That's, I don't mean it bad. I mean, Martin Scorsese can have different tastes in movies. I think this movie, the first half hour was one of the hardest half hours of this. Yeah,
shut up. Really?
No,
wow.
The first half hour for me was genuinely, may have been the hardest half hour of this entire podcast.
Wow.
For me.
That's quite something.
Do you want to know what other people thought of the movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you mention Martin Scorsese right now.
So Martin Scorsese, weirdly, has a review on Amazon. Who would have thought? Did you check the Amazon, Donald? Phil Waller reviewed in the United Kingdom, 2nd of March 2018, says, a really good film, had everything, sexy woman, good effects. Wow, I didn't know what to expect, but a really good film, had everything, sexy woman, good effects. Good gore, but in a funny way. Not a bad story, Rupert Everett played leading part amazingly well. And its psychic was so funny.
Oh.
How I've missed this gem, I'll never know. Purchase it. Well worth the $8.99 on offer at the moment. You Oof, won't be sorry.
Jesus.
5 stars and well deserved.
We watched this on Prime, by the way.
Yes.
Oh, is it Prime or Shudder? No, it's Prime.
No,
it is
Prime. Prime. Straight
yeah,
up Prime.
Yeah, it's on Prime.
Alexander.
Don't pay £9.
5 stars. You'll never see another movie like this. Trust me. That was Alexander's review. Ms. E.J. Baker, who is a top 1,000 reviewer wow. on Amazon. Guys, we got one.
We're in the presence of celebrity.
2 stars.
Oh, dear.
Very violent. Not what I was looking for in research material. And it was not for me.
What?
Shooting brains everywhere does not entertain me. It has been binned. If you love zombies coming back and being shot and hospital nurses also being shot and every minute or so someone being shot, you will love it. 2 people found this helpful.
Now, I don't know if I'm desensitized, but I didn't find this particularly violent, apart from the bus scene and the nurse and the doctor because they're living. But I mean, when the zombies get shot, it's just, I don't know, just another zombo to me. Returner, sorry.
Well, there's also when the, spoilers, the mayor gets bit on the neck.
It's a bit of a chunk.
Off,
yeah.
It looks really good.
Yeah, yeah, it does. But I mean, you know, that's just your standard.
Oh, right.
It's your standard zombo fare. I don't know.
1994, we've been watching movies from the 80s that looked as good as that.
Yeah. Or were much more disgustingly violent, I'd say. Like, it's, you know, it's fine.
LoungeMasterD-963-467479.
That ain't me. That's not my alternate.
We're over to IMDb now. 1 out of 10.
Ooh, the
possibly
old 1 out of 10.
Possibly the worst movie ever made. Imagine you have a choice.
Oh,
I'm not going to lie. See, when I find ones that are like, if you've got a choice between shoving your balls in an angle grinder and watching this movie.
Well, what's his choice?
You can either watch this movie.
Yes.
Or you can have your teeth knocked out with a hammer and a rusty chisel.
I'll watch this movie 100 times. Thank you.
Having seen this movie, I'd choose getting my teeth pounded out.
Oh, dear.
I would get more out of it than anything this movie can offer. This movie is nothing but a mishmash of unrelated nonsense. You may dig it if you're into necroporn.
You may dig it. I'm starting to think that people on the internet are quite hyperbolic. Just judging by the amount of 1-star reviews you've had to read out for us. I'm starting to think that maybe they're a bit reactionary.
Deathbed, the bed that eats, is better than this.
Manimal I've not seen that.
Is
I know
better
what it
than
is.
This. Write all these down. Stroker Ace is better than this.
Now, what is that?
Megaforce is better than this.
Oh, I know
Every
what Megaforce is.
Movie made is better than this. Don't waste your time. If you're bored, tune some tinfoil. Or try to drill into your own head without killing yourself.
Stroker Ace is a looks like a screwball car comedy with Burt Reynolds, which isn't what I was hoping out of it.
Yeah, it's times changed, mate. And our last review, Coventry.
Okay.
This was 19th of July 2003. 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Too cool for words. Then proceeds to post 7 of the longest paragraphs I've ever seen in a review in my life. I am not going to read them.
People will dig this, as the other guy said.
It does start. Sorry, I need to get back into it.
Yes.
At a certain point in life, you realise you know more dead people than live ones. Francesco Della Morte. Just a wee quote. Just a wee quote.
All right, yeah. He's probably got tattoos.
Just a wee quote of the movie there for you. Just to warm you up before my review.
Oh, no.
Quite a broad opinion, but yeah, actually, probably skewed more towards the.
I'm sure the ratings. I'm sure on Prime Video it was like 4.5 out of 5 stars, 78 reviews or whatever. And I mean, you get some really snippy reviews on Prime Video. Watching this are people that love it.
By the way, a lot of the 1-star reviews. I love this movie, but the DVD region.
Oh, really?
There was a huge problem with the DVD Blu-ray release. And it was all about like region stuff.
Oh, Jesus. So it's weird when a cult movie just you don't see the appeal. I just find it odd. You know what I mean?
Well, is that not the point in them being cult?
Yeah, I guess, but just things that I almost kind of feel like I might be able to see a bit of the worth out of it, and I guess maybe sort of I can, but God, it just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Sorry, hair in my mouth. That was a nice image for Ali. Other films to watch. Another film that mixes romance and zombies that isn't that one called Warm Bodies, because I'm not recommending
it's not
that.
The one I was going to... I think it's the one I think you're going to say.
Really?
Yeah. Is it Korean?
No. That's a good one, but that's called Zombie for Sale. That is a good one. We watched it at Fright Fest. It's definitely... leans more towards the comedy of comedy horror.
Yeah, if you want a good comedy horror.
Yes.
Now, if you want a,
it's a bit overlong.
Zombie comedy.
It's definitely a bit overlong. So
Donald, it's Korean.
It's pushing 2.5 hours, but it's generally a very good watch. I was going to recommend something a bit crapper. It mixes romantic zombies into. A strange melting pot stew that I think is a bit off. Return of the Living Dead 3. Now, obviously, Return of the Living Dead, the first one, cult classic, as you know, send more paramedics. 3 is a bit stinky. It's definitely less artful, but it's enjoyably bad. It's like a girl gets killed, comes back as a zombie, but she's like a 90s sexy zombie, so she's like got, it's very like she's just out of a Cradle of Filth video. She's clad in leather. Nice. She's got weird bits of metal stuck in her that kind of look like piercings, body modification, and then like her boyfriend's still in love with her even though she's a creepy horrible zombie.
More necro porn for you, sicko.
Yes, it's definitely but you'd think it'd be more comedic, but it tries to be real romantic. The production quality is fucking awful. It's fun for a watch. I watched it because it was one of those video boxes in the rental place that I always looked at when I was a kid, like, what the fuck is that? That and Dentist 2, which I've not seen, but I hear Dentist 2 is one of the worst things ever. There you go. That's a little window into why I chose it. We're leaving Italy now. I promised we would.
Yeah, we promised Italy we would, I think is more important.
You've not enjoyed your time here.
That's not have my fault.
Oh, right, okay. So, camping site Sexton. Is that what it's called?
Yes, darling.
It's right at the Austrian border, and that is no accident. We are hopping across to check out psychological horror film Goodnight, Mommy.
Goodnight, Donald, but what movie are we watching?
It's called psychological horror. I wonder if, again, it's maybe that kind of sleep tight way, but we'll see.
Yeah,
psychological horror can kind of go one way or the other way. But
yeah, there's also a there's always an overlap with thrillers when you get into that.
Yeah. The other Austrian movie I was looking at was like called Attack of the Lederhosen Zombies or something like that, and I thought let's cool it
and one of them is a stereotype.
Let's cool it on that. Let's go for the one that actually looks like it's going to be good, to be honest.
So I loved Italy as a country. You all need to work on your movies.
Don't fucking say that.
What? I'll say what I want. I'm leaving the country.
Oh my god. What's your personal email address again?
It's caravantourofterror@gmail.com.
Oh no.
Yeah, on that brand. Right, start the engine. I'm sick of this place.
Bye.
Bye.
You fucking asshole.